to be. We ain't meant to be.
Everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and you're listening to bbsradio.com. If you don't know that, that's where you are. It is March the 28th on the East Coast, March the 27th on the West Coast. As I always say, you guys on the West Coast are 3 hours younger, but you will catch up. In fact, maybe tonight's show will help you catch up in a hurry. I've got two guests on tonight, and before I introduce them, I just want to thank Jeff Rentz for having me on his show this evening. I did two straight hours of genealogical research conversation, and it's fried my brain. So I'm really happy to have tonight's guests on because they're going to liven my brain cells a bit and also my heart. They're both writers. They have written a book together, co-authored is the proper term to use, Broken Dreams and Shattered Promises, which was released by Raven Press in 2006. Here we are, 2008, and they're still with us, so they must be doing something right. Also, one of these individuals with us tonight wrote a book called Judaisms. And why did she call it Judaisms? Well, her name is Judy Andreas, and she named the book after herself. I think that's kind of a nice thing to do. Judy Andreas, welcome.
Thank you, Don. It's nice to be here tonight.
I sound like my brain is fried, don't I?
And I sound like my voice is fried. I've been sucking cough drops all week.
Oh, my goodness. Well, before we go on any further, let's introduce our other guest, and this is your partner in crime. In the book that I just mentioned, Holly Avila. Holly, how are you this evening?
Very well, thank you.
Nice to have you on the show, finally. I've been on Judy's case to get you an interview here and actually even let the people know that you are not just a poetess and an essayist. You're also a lyricist and a very accomplished singer and a songwriter, and a guitar player, and bass player. I don't know if you play the harmonica or juice harp, but if you do, you're okay in my book.
Yeah, that and $2 will get me on the subway.
Okay. Now, there's some interesting connections here. I met Judy through my publisher's editors, Don Harkins, and Ingrid Castle from the Idaho Observer. They actually made the introduction, and I got to read Judy's work. And then Judy had told me about you, that you had also co-written a book, and you were like this mystery person. And then she told me you were a musician, and when I was doing the promos for your concert last year, actually it was August 4th, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you know what? That's a kind of an interesting day. That's the day Barack Obama was born, too. You didn't know that, did you?
Well, actually, I belong to an astrology email list, so I know more about their charts than you want to know.
Really? Well, you have to send me a synopsis sometime.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, you guys were performing, I think it was at the Bowery Poetry Club, if I remember correctly. And,
yeah, we did a multimedia sort of presentation with Judy reading from the book and then me performing Just Say No to War, which is in the book as a poem, and then my band doing some of our material.
Yeah. And now you
named
the band.
I'm just dying to interrupt and to ask Holly who won the election from the charts. I just have to control myself.
I think I should tell.
I don't know. Might be able to make some money on this one.
Right, well, here's the prediction. According to the email list I belong to with worldwide astrologers, and one of the most famous astrologers in Mexico who predicted the Mexican earthquake as well as 9/11, but he's not always right about everything, because the way things manifest that are, predicting astrology is difficult, because what the stars are telling you are potential energy patterns. And how those potential energy patterns get manifested have to do with where the collective consciousness is vibrating. So, you can shift any prediction, change it, because you can shift how the potential energy gets manifested. So, but with that said, in how it is impossible to predict the future since we still are shaping the future, with that said, it looks like there's going to be violence on Election Day and on Inauguration Day, that the elections are going to be questioned. My personal prediction is that Hillary will be the president. I think they're setting up Barack Obama to be assassinated. That's the way it looks from his chart. Do you really want to know that? And if you watch TV, it looks to me really like they're setting him up to be assassinated. So that's what I think is going to happen. And they're trying to stir up a race war, too. Because if you've seen any of the sermons by that pastor, Jeremiah Wright, oh, my God, they're awesome sermons. And I used to belong to a black church, and I know black preachers, and that man is a man of God, and I would go to his church any day. I mean, I really liked what he was preaching. He didn't even bring up the School of the Americas. Man, I could have added some stuff to his list of things that are sins against this country. I don't worship America. There's a lot of people out there that think America is their religion, and it's not mine. I worship the true living God. I do not worship America. So I have no problem saying that if America is doing things around the world, torturing people, killing people, bombing innocent people, I call that evil. And if you don't call it evil, then there's something wrong with you.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you. Yes, the murder and you know, we have all these secret societies that are involved in this stuff, and I just did a two-hour show on how they sneak people into the country and groom them for some future role that they're going to play. And really,
yeah,
the three candidates now fit in what I've just found doing ordinary genealogical research. There are some very strange anomalies.
In
most
their
of
bloodline.
Yeah,
in their bloodline. Well, but you can't get there if you're not bloodline.
Yeah. Most of us know where our parents are born. And you know where you were born. You know the date, you know the time, you know the place. I mean, after all, you know, you're doing your chart, right? you
know. Changing the year,
you can't
though.
You can't find Hillary's time anywhere because she won't tell what the time is, but I know several astrologers that are very good at rectifying who figured out her chart anyway. Ha, ha, ha. But she won't tell the time because she knows. But she knows. She knows what astrology is. She knows that astrology can not only be used to figure out what's going on, but you can also use it to manipulate people if you understand it well enough.
And yeah. Well, they all use it, right?
On it, she doesn't want anybody using that kind of magic on her.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, what's interesting is, you know, she's supposedly a Methodist, yet the picture from Henry McCow, Ph.D., that was on Rents.com about 2 weeks ago, the satanic signs, the satanic...
Oh, yeah, please, Methodist. She's an Illuminati priestess from hell. She's an Illuminati high priestess. She's a high priestess in the satanic religion.
I know
they
that.
They just pull his religions out of the air. It's unbelievable. I think I'll be a Methodist. You'd be Episcopalian.
Oh, well, you know, it's, and now she's related to Brad Pitt and Celine Dion and Madonna. Oh, my goodness. Come on. You know, it's like I was joking before, where's Paris Hilton when you need her, you know? Anyway, we know that this is just a charade. It's really a game. It's a shame that the average American, the average person that is a citizen of the United States does not know what's going on.
Well, it keeps the people very busy and very distracted, and they really think that there's this election that started at an ungodly early time to keep everybody distracted.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, being that I am a lumpen proletariat by choice, I work in a grocery store, and I am constantly asking people what they think, what they feel, how they see things that are going on. 4 years ago, well, ever since 9/11 happened, I've been telling people it was an inside job. But let's just say, for example, 4 years ago, I still had to whisper it. I still had to be careful who I said it to. Today, I can say 9/11 was an inside job to absolutely anybody on my line. They believe it, and they want to hear more. You don't know what's happening to the American public. Maybe you're just not out there hanging out with the common everyday lumpen proletariat, but let me tell you, they are pissed as hell. And they're really sick and tired of this crap. And I think if they do try to stir something up like a race war, it's really going to backfire on them because people are seeing through this stuff. I had a woman today tell me she's a staunch Republican and she's going to vote for Barack Obama. I think a lot of people are reacting for Barack Obama because they're so fed up with everything and they think for some reason that he's different or that he doesn't represent the same company. But, of course, he does. He couldn't get that far if he didn't.
Yeah, that's right. And they have handlers. You know, it's been widely reported that Bill Clinton's handler is Hillary.
I've heard that too.
I believe it.
Yeah. So
it's interesting. Holly talks about the people in the store talking about 9/11. When my son was in the Middle East a couple of years ago, he ran into a Chinese fellow who said to him, "How come you people flew planes into your own buildings?" It's like they know it all over the world.
Yeah,
everywhere but here, like what the poor man William Rodriguez and his experience of going around the whole world to talk about this, and everybody wants to hear it but us here. But I think it's changing. I really do. People now are hungry for truth because they're finally getting it that they're being played.
Yes. And, you know, there are so many of the terrorists, the so-called terrorists that they found alive and well in the Middle East. They're appalled that their name is being used in this charade. And now, as recently as yesterday, I heard a very interesting story about somebody who was trying to reach a family of one of the victims on 9/11 who died in one of the plane crashes. I can't remember which one it was. It really doesn't matter. And when he tried to contact the family, the guy answered the phone. The guy that's on the list of the dead people.
Well, that's
and he
of
said
reincarnation.
Yeah, express. He took the expressway this time, huh? Jeez.
I think I'll finish that life.
Well, I mean, these are the kinds of stories. And then, you know, Ted Olson, who was the Solicitor General for the Justice Department, his wife, Barbara Olson, who is this media queen from CNN, she supposedly died in the Pentagon crash and had called him on a cell phone, then called him on a plane phone, then it was a cell phone, then a plane phone, and you know, I think there were five different stories. And Tom Flacco reported that she had been arrested on the border of Poland and Germany back in 2005, I think it was, or 2006, somewhere around that time, with a wig and a Vatican passport.
I just think you had a trench coat and sunglasses. You know?
Yeah, and you know, over $1 million in Italian lira. I mean, these things go on, and we're following this, and it really doesn't matter. We know that that didn't occur. What happened at the Pentagon was not an airplane. I mean, they're really making airplanes well now that when they crash, they disappear into thin air.
Yeah.
That's four.
Well, you don't have to clean anything up. It's
yeah. Four out of four.
Well,
and
we're
then,
probably preaching to the choir here, because, you know, I'm sure the people that are listening to this show are well aware that 9/11 is an inside job, but I'm just trying to tell everybody, embolden yourselves, because you'll be surprised what people are willing to listen to you now.
Yes. Now, I don't by any means, Holly, and you handled me well. You based your comments on what I said. Basically, the general populace of the country has been dumbed down substantially. I talked to someone at a library this evening, and when I said, I'm not looking for mainstream information, I'm looking for documents. And I was searching a document, and this person was really nice in looking for, and she kept referring me to, well, the New York Times had this article, and the Chicago Times had this article, and I said, those would be the last two newspapers that I would find the information I'm looking for in. So, and then she said, oh, they're excellent newspapers. I mean, she has no idea what's going on. And I gave her my website. I said, go to my articles page and read a real research article about the Bush family. Now, if you can come away not thinking that what I wrote is the truth, then you have no business being in the library. And she said, oh, okay, I'll do that. I'll do that. Now, she was very nice, and I'm not attacking her, okay? But here's an educated person that definitely comes in contact with a lot of printed material. She administers and monitors the printed material going in and out of her institution. And she didn't have a clue what I was talking about. So,
that might be part of the problem, though. That might be part of the problem, because she might be too educated, but she just thinks that it's silly to even question things like that, where when you have a basic guy with his World War II hat or somebody that's just, you know, a working guy that just doesn't understand why there are no jobs anymore and there's not going to be any jobs anymore, and they're looking like with these blank looks in their eyes like, oh, my God, does anybody realize that the rug has just been pulled out from under us and there's no floor?
Yeah.
And they all have that look in their eyes. They know it. The older ones, they know it. They just know it. They know that everything stinks. Wow.
Well,
yes.
I call the local station in the morning, and I try to say as much as I can without having them lose their sponsors. But people are stressed. They feel like the other shoe is going to drop. They don't often know why. Maybe they think it's the terrorists, whomever you want to define the terrorists as. But they do feel like something's going to happen. I mean, we're not very secretive about the economy anymore. We're not very secretive about the housing bubble. And I don't know, now there's some rumor about a trucker strike on Wednesday. Did you hear that one? It's also April Fool's, so maybe they'll settle it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're okay. And now, listen, to folks, and I'm asking the listeners to listen to the spirit of these two women. This is what drives them to write the pieces that they do. Judy has many of her essays published in unrents.com and in other venues. You can find her work on the internet. You can find it at her website, judyandreas.com. You can find it on my website, directlightproductions.com. They write from the heart. They write from your perspective of trying to understand and trying to make sense of all this insanity that we're talking about here. Here's three people from different walks of life, and I hear, Holly, you're from Ohio, right? You're a Buckeye.
Not really. I was born in Illinois, and I lived in Ohio.
Well, you lived in Ohio.
Yeah,
okay.
I did live there. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you live. Oh, so you're kind of like Hillary's background too, moving all over the place.
Well, my background, now that I'm starting to look into it, is just scary enough that I'm beginning to think maybe I was one of them MK Ultra kids. No, I have some pretty weird memories. Military, federal government family, born in an Air Force base, adopted. So I'm starting to think, well, you know, my story doesn't quite add up. I get some more information.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm not attacking orphans and, you know, legitimate orphans or, but you're not trying to be the president of the United States either. And, when these people cannot identify themselves sufficiently for the rest of us, and they're unwilling to do that, and everything else they do is secretive and criminal in most cases, of course, we have a right to know these things.
It seems as though so much from the 50s is one big, nasty, dirty secret, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because she's a 50s kid, you know? So much that went on in the 50s was just one big, ugly secret. Whoever thought those were the happy days had to be somebody... Oh, boy, I'm going to get myself in trouble now. Somebody very white and very wealthy.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't very white and wealthy, but I thought they were happy.
Oh, I didn't. I hated the 50s.
I kind of like doo-wops. Mindless. Now I think too much.
Yeah. Let me ask the both of you, and you know, you can arm wrestle over who's going to answer this first. Are you writing as a way of venting how you feel or sorting out your thoughts, or is your intention to awaken people? Maybe it's a combination of all of that, but you know, I'd like to hear, you know, both of you share your personal reasons for that.
Go ahead first, Optimist.
Oh, okay. No, I write for completely selfish reasons. It's an obsessive compulsive disorder. I might be standing at my cash register, a poem or an idea comes to me, and I am its slave. I have to write it down until it's finished, and when it's finished with me, it lets me know. And there it is, and if somebody else reads it, cool. If nobody else ever reads it, I wrote it because I had to. That's all. They come to me, I have to write them.
And you get paid for doing that when you're doing that at work, right?
Well, I'm being paid for bringing up people's groceries, and they think I'm taking notes about what they're buying. Probably making them paranoid as hell.
Buying a bombing
down what I'm buying.
Well, you know, I'm just kidding, but that's really what's going on, right? So are you venting? I mean, you're saying you're writing for yourself. Is it?
Yeah, venting. Yeah, maybe. Yes, I think so. It's a place to put my emotions and my emotions. I think that's what it is for me. Because poetry is a way to try to. I mean, I hope that somebody else reads my poems and experiences an emotion, because that's what a poem is trying to do. It's not trying so much to simulate your mind as to get an emotional reaction. And so it comes from my emotions. If I'm having frustration about feeling as though nobody sees the truth or what's going on, then it makes me feel a little less helpless and hopeless if I write about it. But it's not with the intention that someone reads it. That's sort of icing on the cake.
Yeah. Now, how about you, Judy?
Judy's, I have two. Yes?
I was just going to say, Judy has shared this on past shows, but...
Oh, then I better say the same thing again tonight.
Well, no, I've never really asked this question this way.
Okay. You're giving me an out. I tell you, Don, very often I've written because I need to write. Like when I've written the homeless piece, I needed to write about it. I was so touched. When I'm very touched, my essays, to me, they're like children. When I'm not, and there have been essays in the past, when they were coming fast and furiously, and then all of a sudden there would be a lull, and I didn't know how to deal with the lull, I would push myself to write an essay. And to me, the ones that are pushed are very obvious. You know, but they're there. They're you know, kind of hiding in the pile. But no, there's a qualitative difference.
I was just going to comment on your writing. You have a way of using innuendo in how you write. There's a contradiction going on in your statements that you're using the talking points that they use on TV, you know, in the propaganda. You're using their slogans, but you use them in a way that you put the twist on them to show, to expose what's going on.
Well, I call those my Judaisms.
Yes.
I had written one called The Supermarket, and there was one that was just, it was just loaded with all that kind of stuff. And they're almost like, I don't like the word sarcastic, but they are a little sarcastic.
Oh, you know, I was just thinking the same thing, and I think that's something that you and I both have. We both have a certain edge to our sense of humor, but it's mixed with compassion, incredible compassion. I'm so touched by the compassion that's in your essays, and I hope that my compassion comes through mine. And I think that is possibly an aspect of our motherhood, that we have such a sense of compassion. But it's mixed with, you know, intellect and irony as well. But it's not quite as mean and quite as biting because of the compassion.
Yes. Now, you have a way, Holly, of writing that many of the things you write and could be lyrics in a song, even when they're not lyrics.
Some of the poems are lyrics, some aren't. Some could be songs, some could not. Some poems are not meant to be songs. Some poems could be songs. Eventually turn into songs.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And, you know, I'm thinking like a musician, and I'm thinking, wow, these would be great lyrics for a song. You know, I think that, too.
I don't get the music as fast as I get the words, though.
Yeah, but you stimulate my own creativity, and I'm hearing music, you know, and I'm thinking, wow.
Songwriting team.
Yeah, maybe.
It could happen.
Now, this brings us to another point here, and it might be good for our listeners so they know that yes, you do really sing and you really do play an instrument. And you sent me some music that's actually part of what is going to be your next CD. None of this is really released per se. Although this will be a first on bbsradio.com. And I got to get my FM voice on here, okay? I thought I would play something. Let me ask you something. Do you have a favorite that you would like me to start off with as a way of sneaking into your musical personality?
Yeah, I do.
Or persona.
The song that won the songwriting contest in Global Rhythm Magazine is called Carita de mi Alma. It's my first cumbia that I wrote.
Okay, I have that right here, and I'm going to play it, and we're going to be quiet and listen to this, okay? Querida de mi alma, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Querida de mi alma.
And this is Holly Avila and Blue Planet.
Yes, my band.
It's a party. ruego que Dios proteja los sueños que sigo esperando. Esta pasión es la mejor de toda mi vida.
Very nice.
Bravo.
I love that. Now, that's very unique, if I may say so, and yet I hear elements of Central American, South American music. It has sort of a mariachi feel to it, cumbia, bolero even, and you have all of these. It sounds very continental, if I may say so. Am I describing it accurately, or?
I call it Pan-American fusion. I take North American roots with my sort of Appalachian country vocals, my Appalachian-style guitar playing, add to that Ian Kirk's amazing wah-wah guitar and hot guitar style with rock and roll and blues, North American influence, and then accordion, Central American influence, sort of Mexican-style accordion by Ralph Romano, who is a local Italian guy that's just an amazing musician. He used to play in the Village. He used to open up for Vanilla Fudge. And he's just been playing, you know, I played the Borscht Belt for years, and he's just been playing his whole life, and he's just an amazing, brilliant musician. And I gave him a bunch of CDs from Mexican groups and Los Super 7 and some South American music, and he just really got the feeling for the Latin sound. It went very well with his Italian roots. And then then we have a Peruvian guy, Andres Jimenez, who plays the Andean instruments, so that adds South America. He plays the panpipes and the straight flute called the cana, and the charango, which is like a Bolivian mandolin. And so that adds that Andean influence. So we have South America, Central America, and North America. So I call it Pan-American fusion.
It's almost like the North American Union, though.
Well, there's got to be a good side of it, right? So what my idea is to promote racial unity, because I really don't care about borders either. I really just care about our planet, and, you know, I pledge allegiance to God and God alone. And I think that if rock and roll was the healing influence that really helped the civil rights movement to happen, which is my personal opinion, you know, white kids got to hear black kids' music, black kids got to hear white kids' music, and then we realized not to be afraid of each other anymore, and we realized not to listen to what the grown-ups were saying anymore, and we created rock and roll, and it really helped to fuel the civil rights movement because we weren't afraid of each other anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hear the music of these so-called illegal immigrants who, by the way, Mexicans owned California, New Mexico, and Arizona before we took it from them in a war. So, I mean, how far back do you want to go? Where do you draw the lines? Whose right is it to any piece of land? I think the Native Americans had it best of anybody. You can't own a piece of land. We come through here. So, I mean, who lays stake or claim to a piece of land? I mean, I understand about the American Constitution and how wonderful it is, and maybe this is the first real social experiment and all that. I understand all that, but it was still built on the backs of genocide and slavery, and I can't overlook that. And so my loyalty is not to a country. My loyalty is to the human race. And I think that if you bring in the music of the people that the media is trying to get them to fear, and if you hear that music and realize how beautiful it is, and you think, oh my God, if people make music that sounds that beautiful, they cannot be horrible, dangerous people. Maybe they're wonderful people. Maybe they're as wonderful and their culture is as wonderful as their music is. And guess what? It happens to be true. They have a wonderful culture.
I know that that's true for my own personal experience. I grew up playing with Latin bands in my hometown, and I played both Mexican and Puerto Rican music. And then I also got into what people called soul music at the time, R&B, rhythm and blues. And much of my professional career was with many of the famous R&B groups. Soul music, whatever you want to call it. And I played jazz, too, and classical music. And
Man, you listen to that soul music, and you just, when your old grandmother was saying the N-word to you, you just didn't buy it anymore. And believe me, my grandmother was saying it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that stuff made me sick when I was a kid. I couldn't wait to get out of the Midwest, and where I was trapped with nothing but white people who were racist. And that was my experience. And if you're out there and you're white and you weren't a racist, I'm sorry. I'm not insulting you. But I grew up with that, and that's all I ever heard. And thank God for the black music that I got to hear, because it freed me from a lie.
Yeah. And, you know, in jazz and even some elements of R&B over the years, they've always honored each other's music. Things were incorporated. Now, today, they're sort of they're inserting intentionally Arabic little cliches into the music to give it Arabic flavoring, and this is really done not for an artistic purpose more so much as for mind control and tolerance.
That's funny.
It's my interpretation of it. You know,
I wrote
a song called Osama Bin Laden, and I took an old rock and roll hit, American Woman, rewrote the lyrics about Osama Bin Laden, and inserted intentionally Arabic sounding music in there. And Indian music, and really, you know, to those people, those characters, you know, some of that is very insulting, but it was just a parody, you know.
Where is this song, Don?
Have you ever heard the Gypsy Kings?
Yes, of course, yes.
Excellent.
They're very Middle Eastern sounding. The Middle Eastern music was a huge influence in Spanish music, and then Spanish music is a huge influence in the Americas, so of course, Middle Eastern then was a huge influence of the music of the Americas also.
Yeah, well, and people would be very surprised.
I'm a world music fan. I just love world music. I love world food. I just love everybody's culture. Just tell me about it. I want to know more. I want to know more. You know what I mean?
I played music with Egyptians and Arabs and Africans. I had African percussionists and guitarists in my band. And I played all over the world, and you know, I totally understand what you're talking about. Music is the one thing.
It's the healing force, man.
It always brought people together. Always.
Absolutely.
Always brought people together. And
I once read an article in the New York Times that said that the human brain, it was as if the human brain had been created to make music, because the one thing that human beings do that use both sides of the brain equally is music.
Yes. Now, I'm interested in hearing what
Judy's a musician, too, you know. Judy's a musician.
Yes. Judy plays piano, I understand, and teaches piano.
What a segue, right, Judy?
Now, do you ever let her jam with your band?
I was just listening to the world music. My piano is kind of classical. No, I do teach them.
Well, maybe
you're included in the world.
I'm hanging out with the with the Germans and the Russians, Tchaikovsky and Beethoven, Wagner, and my boys.
Well, but, you know, Holly, you could allow me maybe to compose something, a spoken word for one of your songs, and then you'll have Pan American rap, and you'll really open the market.
I think the things do that already.
Yeah, I'm being crazy.
I've noticed that there are an awful lot of people. I shouldn't put the word awful in, because it just doesn't sound like a great word. But in the alternative media, there are musicians and ex-musicians. Kind of interesting.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of us are musicians because that just, like, it exercises the brain. It tends to, you know, tweak the IQ, I guess.
Yes, that's true. And it enhances psychic abilities, too. Definitely does.
Especially with the people in your band.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I want to again, give us a short break here and play another one of your pieces. I picked one out here that I thought is really a happy song. This song has the potential to be a hit if it's handled correctly. I just think it's so well written, and it's such a happy-feeling song. And it is called Good Things Come to Those Who Wait. And again, this is Holly Avila and Blue Planet. It's such a happy song, you know, and it's so simple. And that when you do that little, you do kind of a bridge transition there, where it goes to the E minor chord.
Mm-hmm.
It is an E minor chord, right?
E minor B7, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Just checking myself.
You're just going off, Don.
No.
No, that's good.
I had to double check. She might have said, no, it's an E-flat minor.
I said that anyway.
No, the E-minor chord, I like that change. It's a really nice transition, and you get really emotional in that, and it comes across really well.
Thank you.
I love that song.
Thank you. That's my Monkees Meets Dusty Springfield song.
Well, yeah, and you know what? I was going to make a comparison and say, you know, it reminds me of Dusty Springfield, and you...
Well, that's who I was thinking of. I love that song, I Only Want to Be With You. And,
yeah.
And it's got that kind of a feeling.
Now, I got an idea this evening, and I want to bounce this off of you and
mm-hmm.
and put you on the spot.
Oh.
And this is recorded on radio, so anyone who tries to steal this idea is infringing
sure.
on my copyright here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a story on Hillary Clinton's $1.6 million campaign donation she took from Peter F. Paul back in 1999 and didn't report it, denied taking any money from him. And it's a very interesting story. There's a documentary on the web about it, and I had the producer on my show this past Monday, Doug Kogan. And Doug did a marvelous job with this video. It tells the story, and it shows flat out that she did take the money, and this is going to be a court case in civil court for
mm-hmm.
multiple millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not to mention that she should be disqualified from the campaign just because of the corruption. But I woke up this morning with the idea that I should write a song about this, and I was going to set it to the music, It's My Party, but call it It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To. Would you sing it?
Oh, sure. That would be fun.
The lyrics are hilarious.
Oh, that would be fun as heck. I'll just pretend it's 1964. I'll tease my hair.
And you know that line, you would lie too if it happened to you.
Yeah, that's great. And actually, if somebody asked me about the secrets of my sex life, I would lie.
Well, this was a campaign donation.
Yeah, well, that's you're not supposed to lie. But in defense of Bill Clinton, not that I'm his fan since Waco happened under his watch, but and not to mention bombing Khartoum, but you know, little things like that. But other than that, the sexual impropriety I really didn't care about, and I think all of us would lie under those circumstances.
Well,
I'd be
yeah,
lying
but
if you wouldn't.
Oh, but he got caught, didn't he?
Well, and I think they only get caught when it's time to.
You heard the thing about Spitzer
you know,
now, right?
What's
Judy,
that?
You heard the thing about Spitzer now, right?
Yeah, well, Spitzer has been doing this for 9 years.
Yeah, but he had just come out about the Bush administration being involved with this whole predatory lending.
Mm-hmm, right. So it's time to bring this hooker out of the closet. You know,
right.
It's ridiculous. Did you hear that story that it was Hillary that gave the order for Waco?
Oh, really? I believe that. She's a cold-hearted reptile. That sounds right to me.
The woman behind the man. She's standing by her man.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Bill was probably too busy, you know?
With a tank. Really
yeah, well,
here. I don't
you know.
What am I doing on this planet, Don?
Well, you're on Evident Footprints tonight. I don't know what you do the rest of your time.
Judy, now you know you incarnated here voluntarily. I don't know. Do we have to incarnate or do we volunteer? That's a good question, right?
Yeah, we. I think we volunteered to incarnate is what we did.
I'm not sure. Sometimes, you know, I have an astrologer friend who thinks we're actually trapped on a wheel, and that's what Nirvana's about is, well, getting off the wheel. But if you don't get off the wheel, man, you just keep coming back around and coming back around.
Well, yeah,
and
that's what
keep living
a friend
the same
of mine called it a prison planet. And this, you know, the only way off here, and here comes the corny stuff, but the only way off is through the love energy. And
oh, absolutely.
It's hard to keep it going, you know, when you're constantly bombarded with all this hate and awful stuff. Even on, I mean, the net is probably one of the worst offenders. Just everybody hating everybody else, and put there on purpose probably just to keep the divide and conquer game playing.
Well, yeah, I think that people were getting along rather nicely until, there's always that element that gets there and stirs things up, you know? I think mm-hmm. that people could get along rather well if there wasn't always the element of the people that have to get in there and stir things up, and then that brings in the question of, are they human, or are those the ones who have other dimensional beings working through them? Because
well,
by the way,
human beings
Johnny,
are not evil. I don't think human beings are evil. I really don't.
Yeah. Judy, you were asking?
Still on the air?
Are we on the air?
Yes.
That's kind of the general idea.
I thought you were an hour show, that's why.
Well, yeah, we got started a bit late tonight, so we're still going a little bit here. If we don't lose our audience. You know, okay, so
hey,
we
I'm
have...
I'm talking with Judy, Howie, and Don.
We have Judy who wrote a book, and then we have Holly that has this band, and then Judy and Holly wrote a book together, and the band has kind of been incorporated in this sort of Dobie Gillis type of gig at the Bowery Poetry Club, and I say that. Remember Dobie Gillis? And,
yeah, yeah.
And Maynard used to do his bebop what? Thing.
Yeah.
You remember sure. that? Okay. The only thing yeah. that you're missing now is for you two and I to work on a book and music together and like put a CD in a book or something. I think that would be fun.
Sounds good to me.
It's so convoluted though. I mean, we have so much going on from so many different directions. We just coming up with one idea and sticking to one idea would be the hard part.
And a good name for it would be 7-Eleven, and maybe we could sell it in the 7-Eleven stores or something.
You're aiming high.
I am the night manager. I say, hostess, ho-host, Twinkie, stay in the shelf. Don't move.
You better put some of that Pakistani music on.
I like Pakistani music. Makes me hungry for
nice,
Indian
food. Yeah.
Well, shall we play one more song here? I know there's a song.
Well, we could get Judy to read something. I haven't heard from her all night.
Well, yeah, we could do that. Should I play a song first and then have her read as
yeah,
a segue?
Yeah, the problem with my reading, I mean, I have no, I'm learning to read. It's not that I have a problem with reading, but the last time I was on, I kind of hogged the show with reading. So this time, it's kind of nice to have Holly doing her music. There's there's one thing that I can think of, which is the... something that we kind of wrote together about the Just Say No to War piece, you know, so that is...
All right, that's a good idea.
Well, that's what I was going to play, Just Say No.
How did he know?
I'm serious, that's what I have queued up, so this is called Just Say No to War?
Don is very scary.
Okay, here we go. Holly Avila and Blue Planet. Just Say No.
No, actually, this is me alone. This is the Joe Baez effect. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Judy comes in later if you want her to. You know, it's up to you.
Okay, so this is Holly Avila and Dark Planet, is it? Or no, I'm just kidding.
Okay. No, it's the 13th planet.
Okay.
Holly X.
Okay. Just Say No. And we're waiting for it to queue up here. Now, this is an MP3, so it's taking a second here. Here we go. Okay. And you're going to hear little beeps and stuff while I get this going. All right. I'm hoping I queued it up.
For the CIA listening to us.
Oh, yeah. They're having a blast tonight. I mean, they don't get to listen to music very often.
They're dancing, yeah.
A nice... Downtime. Ah, there's downtime.
All right, here we go.
It's a rich man's sport, this game called war. Played with the lives and the blood of the poor. They'll preach democracy and setting people free when power and control is all it's ever for. Power and control is all it's ever for. Just don't give a damn about us. Don't be their pawn anymore. Just say no to war. Problem, reaction, solution is how they set the stage. Creating an enemy who's fit for our rage. They'll declare with pride God was on their side. It's the world's oldest book. This is just another page. It's the world's oldest book, and this is just another page. Just say no. They can't play the game without us, and they don't give a damn about us. Don't be their pawn anymore. Just say no to war. War is no solution, just a profitable institution. There is no absolution for cold-blooded execution. Just say no. They can't play the game without us, and they don't give a damn about us. Don't be their pawn anymore. Just say no to war. Just say no. Blood flows like water while fools rush to the slaughter. Don't be a rich man's whore. Just say no to war. We ain't a marching anymore. Just say no to war.
I can see you in the grocery store writing that with your guitar. Paper
no,
or
actually,
plastic?
I was at the cash register writing it on register tape that I ripped off the cash register.
Paper or plastic? And they said, just say no.
And that's just the money. They haven't gotten to the bags yet.
Yeah. Very, very interesting song. Now, how long ago did you write that, if you don't mind my asking?
Jeez, when did I write that? Well, we did the book in 2006, right, Judy?
Yeah. I'm just giving my cough a little equal time here. Yeah, 2006, because that's when I wrote my Isn't It Time We Just Said No to War.
And the song was maybe a year old at that point. So, yeah, maybe 2005. Maybe 2004, 2005.
Okay. Well, I was just curious when you wrote, because it has a little bit of a 60s feel. Almost, you're much better than Joan Baez, I think, but it has a,
whoa,
you know, because you're almost doing it a cappella.
Flattery will get you everywhere. Wow.
Yeah, seriously. No, it's Phil Oakes more. It's still Oakes inspired, sort of Phil Oakes style. As a matter of fact, I quote him at the end. We ain't a marching anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of his songs. But that's why I got into folk music, was so that I could be a pain in the butt and sing things to bum people out and annoy them. I mean, what more fun is there than that? And then, you know, and then I got into playing, like, you know, country western and rock and roll so I could actually make some money. But it was fun doing folk music and just bumming people out.
well, Holly and I kind of, you know, joined forces in that one. There's definitely no time to read my Isn't It Time We Just Said No to War. But it does end with the 100th monkey, which is a little bit optimistic for my blood.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a piece?
I mean, I really hope this is true. I'm really not as pessimistic as I pretend to be.
Yes, I know that. You're having too much fun tonight to sound pessimistic anyway.
Yeah, she loves life too much. If she was that much of a... having as much fun, she really loves life. I know, Judy. We're girlfriends.
I think we just got a call. Do we have a caller on the line?
Is somebody listening?
I heard a beep. Maybe
it's
we didn't.
Probably,
oh, no, that's
phone.
The CIA. Yes,
oh,
no,
I have the 3-in-1 Boggin on Optimum Online, so you have to suffer through these little annoyances.
Oh, okay. Well, before we call it a night here, girls, is there a chance that you can read one of your pieces together, something? How do you do that? Do you, like, exchange lines, like fours and eights and music, or do you?
No, because, just, you know what, Judy, say your little bit about the 100 monkey theory there.
I'm just going to cut out the whole first part of this one, because it comes in right after Holly's, and it talks about March. It was March 30th in 2006, and it was the third anniversary of the war, and I go through this whole thing, and what happened in my, where I was working at the time, was they were spreading around loose change, and it was kind of a chain reaction through the whole building. And I had said if this was occurring in a small county in upstate New York, could it be occurring all over the world? And then I went into the 100th monkey, where I'll go right now.
Okay.
And the Japanese monkey, Macaco fuscata, had been observed in the wild for a period of over 30 years. In 1952, on the island of Koshima, scientists were providing monkeys with sweet potatoes dropped in the sand. The monkey liked the taste of the raw sweet potatoes, but found the dirt unpleasant. An 18-month-old female named Imo found she could solve the problem by washing the potatoes in a nearby stream. She taught this trick to her mother. Her playmates also learned this new way, and they taught their mothers, too. This cultural innovation was gradually picked up by various monkeys before the eyes of the scientists. Between 1952 and 1958, all the young monkeys learned to wash the sandy sweet potatoes to make them more palatable. Only the adults who imitated their children learned this social improvement. Other adults kept eating the dirty sweet potatoes. Then something startling took place. In the autumn of 1958, a certain number of Koshima monkeys were washing sweet potatoes. The exact number is not known. Let us suppose that when the sun rose one morning, there were 99 monkeys on Koshima Island who had learned to wash their sweet potatoes. Let's further suppose that later that morning, the 100th monkey learned to wash the potatoes. Then something startling took place. In the autumn of 1958, a certain number of Koshima monkeys were washing sweet potatoes. The exact number is not known. And then it happened. By that evening, almost everyone in the tribe was washing sweet potatoes before eating them. The added energy of this 100th monkey somehow created an ideological breakthrough. But notice the most surprising thing observed by these scientists was that the habit of washing sweet potatoes then jumped over the sea. Colonies of monkeys on other islands and the mainland troop of monkeys at Takasakamaya began washing their sweet potatoes. Thus, when a certain critical number of achieves an awareness, this new awareness may be communicated from mind to mind. Although the exact number may vary, this 100th monkey phenomenon means that when only a limited number of people know a new way, it may remain the conscious property of these people. But there is a point at which if only one more person tunes in to this new awareness, a field is strengthened, so that this awareness is picked up by almost everyone. Now, this is from from a book called The 100th Monkey by Ken Keith, but this is so relevant for what we're trying to accomplish now with our group that may not feel huge in numbers, and we may feel that there's this huge other side that's playing the game of evil and darkness, but if we can get that 100th monkey, we hope that we will catch on, and once again, light will triumph.
Maybe we should start washing sweet potatoes, and that might.
The 9/11 truth issue is the issue to use to get that collective consciousness quantum leap, so that. So then they start to question everything, because to get them to realize that the war was a lie, they know that already. There's so many things that they just sort of accepted, but I don't think they'll just accept 9/11 being an inside job, and then everything falls apart. I really think that that is the key issue, And it's so clear. It's so easy to convince people, and they're so willing to hear it now. So I just encourage everybody out there that if you think you're ready to give up on telling people about 9/11, now is not the time to give up, because we're about to hit critical mass.
Well, that's right, and well said. And thank you for reading that, Judy.
Yeah, have hope, everybody.
I'm sorry I had to cut the first part short, but you got the idea, and that's the important idea.
Well, I'll buy the sweet potatoes if you guys do the washing.
Why do I always have to wash stuff? I have dishes waiting for me as it is.
Okay.
I like sweet potatoes.
I want to thank you both for coming on Evident Footprints, and will you come back again soon?
Anytime.
Only if we're invited.
Oh, well, I will invite you. The invitation's there right now. If you say yes, you have to do it.
Okay, see you tomorrow night.
Actually,
okay, thank you, Don.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you both, and I will invite you back soon, and we'll listen to more of your poetry and essays, as well as Holly's music. It was very nice.
Thanks.
And we're gonna get Judy to play piano live on radio yet.
Yeah. Chopin.
I wouldn't hold my breath on.
Bring some Chopin.
Okay. Thank you very much, ladies, and I look forward to having you back on again soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and our guests tonight were Judy Andreas and Holly Avila. You can check out their books at Judy's website, judyandreas.com. That's judyandreas.com. Or go to directlightproductions.com, click on books, scroll down a bit, and you'll find their books there. And Holly is working on her CD. Hopefully she's going to let me post it on my website and also on BBS Radio, and we're going to try to sell some of those, aren't we?
Yeah, twist my arm.
Twist your arm. Okay. All right,
sale.
So with that, we're all going to say good night and wish everyone a peaceful, loving, and light-filled night, and a good night.
Love you guys.
Love you.
Good night.
Good night.